Yeah, mantra 6, sorry. It's on page 43. Page 43. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmanyevanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatona vijgupsate. Translation. He who systematically sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his part and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is a description of Mahabhagavat, the great personality who sees everything in relationship, in relation to the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord's presence is realized in three stages. The Kanishta Adhikari is in the lowest stage of realization. He goes to a place of worship, such as a temple, church or mosque, according to his religious faith, and worships there according to the scriptural injunctions. Devotees in this stage consider the Lord to be present at the place of worship and nowhere else. They cannot ascertain who is in what position in devotional service, nor can they tell who has realized the Supreme Lord. Such devotees follow the routine formulas and sometimes quarrel among themselves, considering one type of devotion better than another. These Kanishta Adhikaris are actually materialistic devotees who are simply trying to transcend material boundary to reach the spiritual plane. Those who have attained the second stage of realization are called Madhyama Adhikaris. These devotees observe the distinctions between four categories of being. 1. The Supreme Lord. 2. The devotees of the Lord. 3. The innocent, who have no knowledge of the Lord, and 4. The atheists, who have no faith in the Lord and hate those in devotional service. The Madhyama Adhikari behaves differently towards these four classes of person. He adores the Lord, considering him the object of love. He makes friends with those who are in devotional service. He tries to awaken the dormant love of God in the hearts of the innocent, and he avoids the atheists, who deride the very name of the Lord. Above the Madhyama Adhikari is the Uttama Adhikari, who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee does not discriminate between an atheist and a theist, but sees everyone as part and parcel of God. He knows that there is no essential difference between a vastly learned Brahmana and a dog in the street, because both of them are part and parcel of the Lord, although they are encased in different bodies on account of the different qualities of their activities in the previous lives. He sees that the Brahmana particle of the Supreme Lord has not misused his little independence. He has seen that the Brahmana particle of the Supreme Lord has not misused his little independence given him by the Lord, and that the dog particle has misused his independence and is therefore being punished by the laws of nature by being encaged in the form of a dog. Not considering the respective actions of the Brahmana and the dog, the Uttama Adhikari tries to do good to both. Such a learned devotee is not misled by material bodies, but is attracted by the spiritual spark within them. Questions? Comments? Yes, George Proji. Proji, can you pass on the microphone? Thank you.
This verse talks about how when you see God in everyone, you don't hate anything. And I've heard this saying, and I don't want to talk badly about Christians or Catholics, but I've heard this people say, like, well, I love you, but I don't have to like you. And I've actually had someone say that to me before. It's like, well, you know, he was a priest. He said, I love you, but I don't like you. I don't have to like you. And I think you actually really do have to like the other person if you're going to love them.
Right.
So
right.
I just really like this verse so much because well, yeah, you can go through your day and you don't have to be really mad at people because even if they offend you, you can see that they're also part of God, they're part and parcel of God, and that there's something there that to love. And it's if you remember this verse, it's very easy to be peaceful.
Very nice. Thank you. And also, Prabhupada mentions in the purport that it's not something which is easily available vision. That this is the vision of an Uttama Adhikari. And based on our level in devotional service, sometimes we may have to act in a way suitable for our devotional service. When we advance in devotional service, we come to the situation that everything is moving by the will of Lord. And Srila Prabhupada writes that not a blade of grass actually moves without the will of the Lord. And you see, everything is happening by Lord's mercy. And even the troubles when you come, when somebody is harsh with you, or when somebody is trying to act as in your enemy, trying to undercut you, backstab you, or degrade you in front of others, you see that that is happening by the mercy of the Lord. And you are at peace with yourself. You know that this is the past reaction I have incurred for my sinful work, and now I am reaping it. But because of Krishna's mercy, I am actually reaping a fraction of what I am supposed to reap. But this stage of advancement comes over a period of time. And sometimes it comes directly by Krishna's mercy, but sometimes it comes through over a period of time of long sadhana, Hare Krishna. If one can't see in that fashion, one shouldn't be despondent. That's my point I'm trying to make. Well, Ishopanishad says that I have to see everybody as part and parcel of God, but when I see this person, I actually hate him. Why is that? Because it is something our own vision is developing, and it's not yet developed. So, while Krishna gives, so therefore Krishna gives the preliminary injunctions in Gita. He says that love and hate, they are both sides of the same coin. And one who controls love and hate, Ichha Dvesha Samuttena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. It's there in the 7th chapter. If we read the 7th chapter here, let's go take up the 7th chapter. I think it's 28th verse. No, 27th. 27th verse. 27th verse, page 359. Mataji, you can come right up. So, page 359. Ichha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. Translation. O scion of Bharata, O conqueror of foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arising from desire and hate. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by the illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate can understand that Lord Sri Krishna appears by His internal potencies. But those who are deluded by duality and nishains think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. This is their misfortune. Such persons symptomatically dwell in the dualities of honor and dishonor, pain and happiness, woman and man, good and bad, pleasure and pain, etc. Thinking, this is my wife, this is my house, I am the master of this house, I am the husband of the wife, of this wife. These are the dualities of delusion. Those who are so deluded by the dualities are completely foolish and cannot therefore understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a catch-22 situation. So on one hand, you are born into delusion, and without understanding God, you cannot actually come out of it. But on the other hand, Ishopanishad says that one who has actually learned God, then he sees everything as part and parcels of the God. So Krishna, he gives systematically verses in Gita where he says, you know, stumbling blocks, these attachments, hate, and they are stumbling blocks in the path of self-realization. You try to control them. And initially that is the stage wherein you actually control that, having faith in Krishna's words. And slowly when we come to the pure spiritual state, then we can see that everything is Krishna. Everything is the energy of Krishna. There is nothing beyond Krishna. So if things are happening by will of Krishna, why should I hate or love anything that's happening by will of Krishna? That is going to be the advanced vision. And you just don't see anybody as your enemy. You see everybody is part and parcel of Krishna. Everybody either A, is in pure state, or B, being really punished by the modes of material nature. Either way, one is not disturbed. So that sort of advancement can happen through devotional service very quickly. So if one is discouraged, please not. And you know, it's said that I have to see everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. The other extreme is that, oh, Prabhu, actually, oh, sir, I don't see any light coming out of you. You are a pure spirit soul. Where is that light coming out of your shirt where I can see the Atma? No, it doesn't happen that way. So the idea is that internally you are so realized that you see everybody as part and parcels of Krishna. Everybody has spiritual spark. Any other questions, any other comments before we go ahead? Hare Krishna. So we are on Isopanishad, for those who have come late. Isopanishad page, where did my copy go? Oh, there it is. Thank you. We are on page 43, now we are on page 45. That is page 45, second chapter. Second paragraph, thank you. Page 45 of the Isopanishad. Those who imitate an Uttama Adhikari by flaunting a sense of oneness or fellowship, but who behave on the bodily platform are actually false philanthropists. The conception of universal brotherhood must be learned from an Uttama Adhikari and not from a foolish person who does not properly understand the individual soul or the Supreme Lord's super soul expansion who dwells everywhere. It is clearly mentioned in this sixth mantra that one should observe or systematically see. This means one must follow the previous acharyas, the perfected teachers. Anupashyati is the exact Sanskrit word used in this connection. Anu means to follow and pashyati means to observe. Thus, the word anupashyati means one should not see things as he does with the naked eye, but one should follow the previous acharyas. Due to material defects, the naked eye cannot see anything properly. One cannot see properly unless one has heard from a superior source. And the highest source is the Vedic wisdom, which is spoken by the Lord himself. Vedic truths are coming in disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyasa, and from Vyasa to many of his disciples. Formerly, there was no need to record the messages of the Vedas, but people in the earlier ages were more intelligent and had sharper memories. They could follow the instructions simply by hearing once from the mouth of the bona fide spiritual master. At the present, there are many commentaries on the revealed scriptures, but most of them are not in the line of disciplic succession coming from Srila Vyasadev, who originally compiled the Vedic wisdom. The final, most perfect and sublime work by Srila Vyasadev is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. There is also the Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by the Lord himself and recorded by the Vyasadev. These are the most important revealed scriptures, and any commentary that contradicts the principles of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam is unauthorized. There is complete agreement among the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Vedas, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and no one should try to teach any conclusion about the Vedas without receiving the instructions from the member of Vyasadeva's disciplic succession, who believe in the personality of Godhead and his diverse energies as they are explained in the Isopanishad. Comments? Because how do we get this vision? Srila Prabhupada says, Now, I can't go to a store and then say, you know, give me the goggles of universal vision. And then, or you can say, you know, once I put on that glasses, now I can see everybody as part and parcels of God. So when we actually understand through the eyes of previous acharyas, then we can know for sure. And having faith in those words, then we can actually follow those. Because in this modern society, because of the rampant materialism, everybody is being thrust upon this idea that I am somehow this body, and this lifetime is the lifetime I need to enjoy. Somehow or other, if I can make enough money and enjoy my lifetime, I'm the most perfect Paramahamsa that ever existed. That is the whole... one is soaked, one is inundated with sort of philosophy. Name it, the universities, the papers, the media, everything, your own well-wishers, unless they are devotees, they are going to tell you that, you know, just live and enjoy your life. Somehow or other, struggle with studies when you are young, grow up, you get a job, you make money, you're done. And then when a young person actually tries to take up the spiritual life, they actually, what are you doing? This is a young age. This is the age to enjoy. What's wrong with you? Something is wrong here. This is the unfortunate situation of this age. But Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, when we systematically follow the previous acharyas and try to understand their words, then slowly one develops this vision. It just forces. Initially, a man or a woman, he or she is born, they are born into ignorance. And when we get information through systematic training from the spiritual master, then we slowly understand, oh, okay, this is actually knowledge, what knowledge is, that I am not this body. And then when we get this knowledge, then one tries to understand who is God. Then when you naturally try to understand God, Krishna says, Mamai Vamsho, that everybody is my part and parcels, then you don't really see anybody as your enemy. There is a systematic development of that particular universal vision that happens here. The other option is that through bhakti process, if one completely is enlightened about Krishna, then the shortcut that my self-realization and everything is not needed. When I realize Krishna, I see myself. Just like if there is sun, you see not only everything and the sun itself, but I also see my reflection in the mirror. Now, if you are in a very dark room, or if you are in a completely pitch black area, and if there is a mirror right in front of you, you still cannot see yourself. But when the sun rises, you not only see everything around, but you see yourself. So when you realize Krishna through the process of bhakti yoga, everything lights up. Everything is perfectly understood. Because why? Krishna says that once you know me, there is nothing to be known. In the 7th chapter, he says, Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshami aseshataha yajnatva bhuyaneyonya jnatavyam avishishyate. Krishna says that, my dear Arjuna, I'll explain to you both this phenomenal and numinous knowledge, that is material and spiritual knowledge. You know that, you don't have to know anything else in this world. Why? Because you know Krishna is source of everything. And you realize that I'm just an insignificant part and parcel of Krishna. And if I am engaged in service of Krishna, then my life is happy. And that is what I have been seeking since time immemorial, birth after birth after birth, after having suffered through the insecurities and through the angsts and pains and anxieties of this material world. When one actually situated in the platform of devotional service, he knows this is what I have been looking for since time immemorial. This is what has been the missing component of my life. And furthermore, Krishna says that that particular thing is possible only through bhakti yoga. Now, there are other forms of yoga systems. Krishna says in the first 6 chapters of Gita, he enunciates different platforms of yoga. And then in the 6th chapter, 47th verse, he says, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam samayukto tamomatha. He says, of all these yogis, those who abide in me and those who faithfully serve me, they are the highest of all. And that particular yogi has so intense happiness, he doesn't want anything else. Said in the Bhagavatam 11th canto, that those devotees, Lord speaks to Uddhava, that those devotees who are engaged in my devotional service, they do not want any position of Indra. Neither they want supremacy over all this earth, nor they want the supremacy over the lower planets. Forget all these material things, they don't even want liberation. They don't want to be in a position where I am free from all these anxieties. All they want is my lotus feet. And that is the nature of devotional service to Sri Krishna. That by his nature, by his sweetness, by his qualities, it attracts the soul to such an intense degree that this is what I want. And this is what I've been hankering for. And I don't find anything else greater than this. One might question, Prabhuji, we have five rasas. You know, there is Dasya, there is Shanta, and you know, you talk of all these big things. So it is like, you know, the prema rasa is highest. So, you know, how can you say that a devotee who is engaged in a particular other rasa, he's getting the highest happiness? The answer to this is, Srila Prabhupada explains that a particular devotee has a particular mellow or rasa in which he serves or she serves Supreme Lord. Of course, on a spiritual platform, everything is a spirit soul. There is no distinction of he or she. But Srila Prabhupada uses the soul as he, so we'll use soul as he. When you say differ to soul as it means to say a mechanical object which has no life, but soul has life. So this is a digression. But the soul, when it's serving the Lord in a particular rasa, either Shanta, Dasya or Sakya, that soul feels this is the highest rasa, this is the most elevated of all rasas, and this is what I have been looking for, whether it be Dasya or Shanta or Sakya. That is the nature of one's own swarup or devotional service to the Lord. And any form of devotional service to the Lord is highest, is accepted by the Lord, and the Lord reciprocates accordingly. It's not that Lord has special favor to those who are in conjugal love, and the Lord kind of, Lord doesn't treat like that. Those who are in the Dhasya Rasa or Sakya Rasa, they get that highest same happiness by reciprocation with the Lord, because they want to see Lord as their friend, or they want to see Lord as their child, and they are happy in that rasa. Srila Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, but if you analyze in a very analytical and unbiased way, then we find that Madhura Rasa or the conjugal love is the highest form of devotional service. But that doesn't in any form, shape, belittle or degrade or lessen the value of other forms of rasa. This is the rasa tattva. When we do, those who are in Bhakti Shastri, when we go do Nectar of Devotion, then we will read more into these particular things. But and how this comes about and things like that, that's a big topic. Rupa Goswami, he has written Nectar of Devotion, which is about 2,129 verses. To explain all these rasas or these dealings, you know, how the rasas evolve and how they do. But suffice to say that all our spiritual endeavors, all our philosophical conclusions must come to this point and accept the form that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and I am his eternal servant. For those who are simple, it is easy to accept, but for those who are not, it's a very, very complicated thing to accept. Really complicated. Why is he God? Why should I be his servant? What happiness will I get? But Krishna says that he is trying to be his own devotee just to taste that sweetness. But this is something which, again, unless one is in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, coming through the disciplic succession, one cannot properly understand these truths of how Krishna consciousness, which is so simple, is the highest of all truths. And, you know, how that more austere forms of yoga, most like a lot of Ashtanga yoga exercises and all that seems a little appealing, but and this seems really simple. You know, what are you doing? Just chanting all day long? All day long, that's great if we can chant all day long, but we don't. But even then, he says, just by chanting, yes, that is Mahaprabhu's mercy. Just by chanting, by this sublime process, you get the highest benefit, which is prema. Well, there are three stages. One shouldn't be discouraged if they cannot chant sincerely. It's not like one or zero. I chant perfectly, I'm perfect. If I can't chant perfectly, I'm zero. I can't chant. I don't want to chant. It doesn't work that way. There are three stages. That is Namaparat, Namabhash, and Shuddhanam. In the Namaparat stages, we chant and we commit a lot of offenses. But there is a two-way process. One thing is that we still keep chanting and trying to reduce our offenses. And the second stage is actually we get the glimpse of pure name. We are not yet free of the offenses, but we get the glimpse of name. And the third stage is Shuddhanam. So our sincerity of chanting is what matters. And our desire, our efforts which we put into chanting is what matters. Initially, when we chant, we either slur on our chanting, we may not speak the words pronounced correctly, and even if we somehow or other master and we pronounce the words exactly, our mind is doing 24/7 rotation of the earth. It is going here, going there. No, Iceland is better. I go to India. The mind is going anywhere. Let it go. That's the way the mind is. So, I want a lassi, Hare Krishna, I want to eat cake, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, I want money, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. That's how the mind does. But when we chant, slowly the mind kind of gets, diverted. Mind kind of slowly comes to the holy name. The point is that we shouldn't get discouraged. We shouldn't get despondent. Because the very fact that one gets discouraged is a trick by Maya to kind of say, you know what, because this is a serious thing. You know, please understand, the goal of our sadhana is the price we are getting is very, very high. Because Krishna, he can give any material benediction. He is the Supreme Lord. He can give, forget money, forget $1 billion. He can give a planet, a whole planet which can't be destroyed by time, like he did for Dhruva. He can give a position of Brahma with the power to create universes. Here we are saying we can control something, we can create something, we are great. Brahma is creating whole universes and destroying whole universes. His lifetime is great. That Krishna can give. Krishna also can give liberation. It's not a problem for him. But our goal of our sadhana is that we are wanting Krishna himself. And in the stage of prema, Krishna is subdued. Krishna is controlled by his devotee's love. Now you just go and say to the President of the United States, "Sir, I'm going to serve you. Now you come under my control. Will you come?" This is a very powerful, he's a supreme lord, he's a supreme lord of all that exists. He's unconquerable, undefeated by time. And yet he's defeated by the love of his devotees. And when we get prema, Krishna is subjugated. And that is, my friend, very, very high price. Very supremely sweet price. In that, of course, it's again, we are not like, you know, okay, I'm going to control Krishna, let me do some prema bhakti here. It doesn't work that way. Our understanding is that we are eternally servants of Krishna, and our goal is only to make Krishna happy. And Krishna also says that I'm also going to make my devotee happy. I'll become the servant of my devotee. And devotee says, "No, Lord, I'm your servant." Krishna says, no, I'm your servant. So that sweetness of relationship, it goes on. It's a different, but that's the theme. It is that sweetness of the Lord that makes one dare to say, "Krishna, I'm going to climb on your shoulder." Now, imagine going on to the altar and saying, "Krishna, I'll climb on your shoulder." It's a great offense just to do that. But here, the cowherds of Vrindavan, the gopas of Vrindavan, they were saying, "Krishna, I'm going to climb on your shoulder." And Krishna happily, actually, you know, climbed him on his shoulder. It is said in the Srila Prabhupada that chastisement of the gopis, Krishna hears, so sweet to him, that these are high-class Vedic brahmanas offering most perfect Sanskrit prayers. Krishna is more like, you know, "You, Krishna, you are doing like this. Why are you coming and meet me?" And then that is Krishna is hearing more than Krishna, Rama. So this is different. That is Krishna's nature. That doesn't mean brahmanas are any less. But that is Krishna's sweetness that attracts him. That's the love. And when we are doing, when we are performing our services, when we are taking shelter of our Gurudev and following his instructions, that is the goal we are trying to get. And that is not something Krishna gives easily. That is prema. And that's the relationship of love. In what form that prema takes is something which, when we advance in spiritual life, it will be revealed. But let's not jump there. Just the fact itself, that sadhana which we are doing itself, is so sweet that keeps us engaged to more and more advancement. And as we get taste, we think that, you know, this is what it is. And everything else, you know, the desire for having a Mercedes Benz or a big home or, you know, fat bank balance or big stock options or that political office which I was eyeing for, they become tasteless. Burdens. They become tasteless. Why? Because they realize that such sweetness in Krishna's love. There's such intense happiness. Rupa Goswami says that there are three kinds of happiness in Nectar of Devotion. Says that when you actually engage in sense gratification, when you actually enjoy sense objects, you derive some happiness. And millions of times better than that happiness is the happiness of Brahman or Brahman realization, when I actually merge into the Lord. Now, if you multiply that happiness 1 trillion of trillion times, that Brahman happiness, you multiply it with 1 trillion of trillion times, that won't be even a drop of the happiness that one gets in devotional service. So that is the nature of happiness through prema. And that's what we are looking for. It's not a small thing we are trying to kind of achieve. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is non-different than Krishna himself, he said, you want this? I'll give you a sweet, simple method. Just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when you chant offenselessly, you will get prema. Simple goal. Shei dware achandale kirtana sanchare nama prema mala ganti parailo sabare. It's said in Chaitanya Charitamrita that through this simple method of chanting, he attracted even the most unqualified people. Shei dware achandale kirtana sanchare nama prema. He wove a wreath of nama and prema and he garlanded the whole world. That is the munificence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he invested that holy names with prema of Krishna. And just by chanting these names, one gets love of Krishna. That's the goal. Any questions? Any comments? We'll just complete. Yes, yes, Mataji, you had a question.
It's not really a question, or maybe it is. Maybe you could speak a little. Recently, I was reading the story of when Rupa Goswami was wanting so much to please Sanatana Goswami, and he woke up in that morning and thought how nice it would be if I could make some nice prasadam for my guru, Sanatana Goswami, and some sweet rice. And then some girl from the village came and brought the sweet rice, and he prepared a very nice meal and offered it to Sanatana Goswami. And when he was eating it, Sanatana Goswami said, oh, how nice this is, but you normally don't have the facility to cook in such a nice way. Where did you get these ingredients? And Rupa Goswami told him, and then Sanatana Goswami said, but there is no girl in this village who has these qualities or who could have. And so he was thinking it was Srimati Radharani himself who brought these ingredients. And then he became frustrated because he wants so much to serve Srimati Radharani, and here she had brought something. But I was thinking how touching it is that she had, you know, that they had served so well that she had honored them by giving some, you know. But it's to me, it's when I read it, I don't want Sanatana Goswami to be mad at Rupa Goswami. You know, it's like I get confused in my mind. Maybe you could speak a little bit on that to make me understand.
The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were highest exemplars of being the devotees of the Lord. And their dealings are something which is beyond our understanding. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that a ordinary person cannot understand the activities of the pure devotee of the Lord, how he thinks, how he behaves. And the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were on the highest platform of devotional service, and they were empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. It is the nature of such an advanced soul that the object of your service, to whom you are rendering service, renders service to you. It's an extremely embarrassing position. And though externally he was a little upset with Rupa Goswami, but internally he was... What happened? Oh, Gaura. Okay. So that confirms what I'm saying. So externally, he was a little upset with Rupa Goswami. Internally, he was very happy. He was transcendentally blissful eating that kheer to the satisfaction. So their dealings are something which is not like our mundane dealings. And they are completely transcendental. And Rupa Goswami considered Sanatana Goswami as his guru and his elder brother. So in the spiritual life, when one is chastised by the guru, then one is very blissful or happy. Because the guru thinks that you are fit for chastisement. There are many, many stories in Chaitanya Charitamrita which actually confirm this. And now that you have brought the topic of Sanatana Goswami, let's talk a little bit about Sanatana Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami was living in Vrindavan, and one day he went to see Mahaprabhu in Puri. And while he was traveling back to Puri, he drank some contaminated water. And because of this, he got a sort of disease, because of which there were pores on his body, and they were oozing with pus and blood. And they were very painful. And when he went to Puri, he was staying with Haridas Thakur, because both Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were formerly employed by the Mohammedan ruler, and as such they were considered outcasts by the societies, and they were not allowed to enter into the Jagannath temple. And so whenever they visited Puri, they used to stay with Haridas Thakur, who also was not allowed to enter into the temple. But because they were such exalted devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every day without fail would come and meet them. The Lord Jagannath himself would come and meet his devotees. And every day without fail, he would embrace Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami would cringe. My Lord, please don't embrace me. I'm just oozing with pus and blood. And then when I see that you embrace me and that blood comes onto your transcendental body, I can't tolerate it. It's like a big offense. And but nevertheless, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would give reasons why he did that, but he would embrace him every day. And then Sanatana Goswami was feeling really, really, really bad at heart. And then one day he confided to Jagadananda Pandit. He said, I came all the way from Vrindavan so that I can serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Here, look, what am I doing? Because of this condition of my body, and when Mahaprabhu embraces me, I'm causing an offense to him by causing all these things onto his body. What should I do? And then Jagadananda Pandit said to him, Mahaprabhu said you should go to Vrindavan. He should serve there. He gave you services in Vrindavan. What are you doing here? You go to Vrindavan. And then Sanatana Goswami said, that's a brilliant idea. Why didn't I kind of do that? And then he made his mind to go to Vrindavan. Then Sanatana Goswami went to Mahaprabhu and said, Mahaprabhu, you know, I spoke to Jagadananda Pandit. And he said, you know, I should go to Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu became furious. Who is that boy, Jagadananda, who thinks he is such an exalted soul that he can instruct you what you should do? Where you, Sanatana Goswami, are such an exalted personality that you are fit to be my guru. And he chastised Jagadananda Pandit. And then Sanatana Goswami, ordinarily what would people say? I am fit to be like Mahaprabhu's. But Sanatana Goswami, you know, what was his reaction? He said, what sort of offense did I commit that you are giving me this bitter fruits of praise? And how close is Jagadananda Pandit to you that you are chastising him? That is the nature of devotee. It's so that they are very elevated reactions. So one shouldn't take too seriously about Rupa Goswami being chastised. Because Sanatana Goswami was actually his elder brother and his guru. So he could do that. And that was the transcendental lila. There is also another story, but I think it's, what's the time, 5 to 8? There's another story also where Sanatana Goswami was kind of chastised Raghunath Das Goswami for the exact same thing, for taking service from Radharani. And so that's okay. Does that pacify your heart a little bit?
Thank you so much, yes.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Any other comments, questions? We have about 10 minutes, maybe 5, 10 minutes before Kishore leads us in the Aarti. All right. We have the last paragraph on page 46 in the Isha Upanishad. We'll complete that and then we can wind up. According to the Bhagavad Gita, this is the last paragraph on the page 46. According to the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 54th verse, only one who is already on the liberated platform, Brahmabhuta, can become an Uttamadhikari and can see every living being as his own brother. This vision cannot be had by any politicians who are always after some material gain. One who imitates the symptoms of an Uttamadhikari may serve another's outward body for the purpose of fame or material reward, but he cannot serve the spirit soul. Such an imitator can have no information of the spiritual world. The Uttama Adhikari sees the spirit soul within the material body and serves him as the spirit. Thus, material aspect is automatically served. So Srila Prabhupada says that any politician who has no knowledge of spirit soul can never become an Uttamadhikari. You know, politicians seem to be like Uttamadhikaris. They say, oh, this is my country, everybody is my people, black, white, African-American, this skin, that skin, everybody is my people. But actually, if they have no information of soul, then they cannot be Uttamadhikaris. Otherwise, every politician can see Krishna or see spirit soul. Any questions? Any final comments? Shraddha Mataji, yes.
Prabhuji, on page 44, it describes that where they are talking about the Kanishtha Adhikari, there it says that they cannot ascertain who is in what position in devotional service, nor can they tell who has realized the Supreme Lord. So who are the type of devotees who can tell who has realized the Supreme Lord? Is it the Uttamadhikaris? They have that powers?
So your question is that if the Kanishtha Adhikaris cannot realize the Supreme Lord, who is that have realized the Supreme Lord? I'm confused.
They are not able to make distinction between the various types. So they will not know, looking at a devotee, whether he's Kanishtha or Madhyam or Uttamadhikari.
Right.
And it also says they cannot ascertain as to who is in what position in devotional service, nor can they tell who has realized the Supreme Lord.
Okay.
So I was asking, is it the Uttamadhikaris who have this, you know, capability to distinguish? Looking at a devotee and say, sometimes you come across people who say, I'm self-realized, and say, how do we know they are self-realized, you know, that a person is self-realized? They could just be making a claim.
There are two questions. First thing is like who's the person who can tell whether he's a self-realized, or who is the person who can know? The Prabhupada gives the answer in the second paragraph that those who are Madhyam Adhikaris, they can distinguish. I mean, they are on the second intermediate level of devotional service, and they know who's a person who's envious of the Lord, who's a person who's innocent, who's a person who's advanced, and who is the Lord himself. So they have kind of have that basic understanding. The difference between Madhyam Adhikari and Uttam Adhikari is that a Madhyam Adhikari acts based on that knowledge. Uttama Adhikari doesn't, because he sees everybody as part and parcels of God, and he doesn't act in any way because he is uncontaminated. The example can be that Maharaj Bharat. That example can be used for both, to your second question also. Maharaj Bharat, he was an exalted soul, and he never treated anybody as his enemy or anybody as his friend. People were against him, he would still tolerate everything happening by the will of the Lord. So he was a completely liberated soul. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the last paragraph that unless one is on the Brahmabhuta stage, one cannot be an Uttamadhikari. And he was a completely self-realized person, and he was a Uttamadhikari who didn't take anybody as his enemies. People, the dacoits, as we know the story, the dacoits actually came to offer him as a human sacrifice to Goddess Kali. And he didn't protest. He didn't do anything. And so that is the level of Uttamadhikari. But a Madhyamadhikari acts on his realizations, and he says, oh, this person is envious, I won't talk to him, because this association is something which may hamper my own spiritual life. And it's best in my own interest that I stay far away from him. This person is a person whom is a very nice, sincere devotee. I want to get more association so that I can advance in spiritual life. So they act based on that intelligence. And a Kanishta platform, that person thinks, here is God, I'll serve him. You, I don't know. The whole idea is, I can't. I just don't know, because I don't have, neither did I read my scriptures properly, neither do I have faith in that scriptures. I can't distinguish between who is who. I still have strong material desires, and somehow, I do, or I serve God as some sort of hobby or side business. And I have a little bit of faith. But if somebody comes in and presents more powerful arguments, Krishna is not God, oh, this is, I'm completely changed. My mind is changed because I am on that platform. And Prabhupada says that one in the Kanishta stage, one if associates with the devotees, has proper association and increases the faith, then one can go on to Madhyama. Otherwise, one just will kind of come here, do something, and then just go away. There's no steadiness in devotional service. And given the fact that this modern world, there are tremendous amounts of philosophies, spiritual ideas. Nowadays people say, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. What do you mean by that? Well, I'm so intelligent that I can pick and choose everything from every which way and religion, and that is my religion, or that is my belief. That is modern. I'm spiritual but not religious. We go on book distribution, we hear this argument a lot. And later, actually, initially I didn't understand. When I came to this country, I didn't understand, what do you mean? Because coming from India, religious and spiritual is one and the same. But here, when you say, I'm spiritual but not religious, I couldn't understand. Then I realized that, it means that I can hodgepodge anything. I can pick up here and there and everywhere. I can be really spiritual. So in that age, when you are being assaulted with so many different philosophies, unless one is like having a strong association and reading Prabhupada's books regularly, there is no way mind can be fixed, intelligence can be fixed in devotional service. Thank you. And so, sorry Prabhuji, I'll just answer. So the question of somebody says, I am self-realized, usually a self-realized person doesn't say that. That is said, Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava says that a person who has become self-realized, he acts like a dumb, lame person, not telling to the world about his glories. He just acts like he's a normal person. So, the person never says, I am self-realized. And B, is that when somebody says that, so you say, what do you mean by self-realized? So, what are you feeling now that you are self-realized? If he says, I'm having better sensual activities, then it's nothing. So you can ask, what do you mean when you say you're self-realized? So probably that will counter.
Recently came across a person, and he's doing all kinds of spiritual activities, like distributing books, and but he says, I'm self-realized. And he also has got Atma something, he added some Atma thing to his name also back in India, so... I was just wondering, what do you do? And sometimes you also have where the disciples of a particular guru are so they are so enamored of the guru or whatever, they will go and declare to the world that, that Guruji is self-realized. So that's where, I mean, in India you face so much of that.
Right.
That how? So I was just asking, how do we sift and sort between the bogus and the real? You know.
Because Prabhupada, you know, he was a pure devotee. He was a self-realized soul, and he never said that I am self-realized. But people could just see from his divine vision, and that's how he could attract by his purity. So we'll know who is self-realized. Well, there is another aspect to it. I just quickly want to clarify is that Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita that anybody who has this theoretical knowledge that I am not this body is self-realized. So that doesn't mean you are self-realized. You still have to act and realize that particular aspect. So just having this knowledge won't. Yes, there's Rakshit Prabhu and then there is one more. Yes.
Spiritual, are they implying that first of all they know the difference between matter and spirit and that they are as such identifying with the spirit? Because if they do, then they are one step closer to that. It is fashionable to use the word spiritual without knowing the distinction between spirit and body. That is one point. And the other is, when somebody says they are self-realized, according to the Gita, it would mean that they know that the living entity, for what it is spirit soul. And so self-realized is firstly having this knowledge that one is not the body, one is the soul, and that one is doing something which has allowed the person to become, as Krishna says to Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita, gets situated in the self,
right,
where he's talking about the higher self and not the lower self, which is the mind and the body. And so a self-realized person would essentially, he doesn't have to say it, but it would be one who has become situated in the self and are then practicing and doing everything that comes from that domain. So that is where the test would be as to whether one is spiritual or self-realized. With respect to what is it that they are identifying with and how they are behaving in their practices. As you say, they don't have to say it. It only will show in devotional service or what they do.
Right. Thank you. Very nice point. You had a question or a comment?
Is this a point in time beyond which you become self-realized and before which you are not self-realized, or it is a process that is ongoing? That is question number one. Second, as Mataji pointed out, I also have come across some people who basically claim that since they had a vision of Krishna, person-to-person contact with Krishna, from that point on, they declare themselves as self-realized. So could you please clarify on that?
Your first question was, if we see the Brahma Samhita, here it is said that devotion is attained in slow degrees. If you see that particular verse, it is 559 in Brahma Samhita. It says, Pramanais tad sadacharais tad abhyasair nirantaram vodayan atmanatmanam bhaktim apyuttamam labet. So, in this verse, it is said that the devotion is attained by slow degrees, by proper practice, theistic conduct, and perseverance. This is Brahma's opinion. And then what do you get after doing all this is, you get bhakti uttamam labet, means you get pure devotional service. Now, unless one is... So, that is the answer to your first question. That's a slow process. Having said that, in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says there are two types of perfected beings. One is Sadhana Siddha and one is Kripa Siddha. Now, Sadhana Siddha is a person who is perfect because of his devotional practice. And Kripa Siddha is a person who has been given mercy by Krishna. Now, the Kripa Siddha is rare, and it happens in a very, 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 very rare. By and large, it's Sadhana Siddha that is important. And Krishna says, for most of us, it is slow practice. Because Krishna says in the 7th chapter, 14th verse, that this particular material nature is strong. You cannot overcome it unless you surrender unto me. What is that verse? Daivi? Daivi esha gunave mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayametam turandite. So this material nature is very difficult to overcome. And it's not just that one day light. There is one point of time. And then what were you doing till that point of time? You are just leading your life willy-nilly, and one fine morning, that second it transformed. It doesn't work. So I was like, before that point of time, I was trying to get Krishna for 100 million lifetimes. Yeah, then that is true. One day Krishna will give you mercy and he will reveal himself. And then, you know, from that point of time, one becomes completely pure and completely absorbed in Krishna. But till that point of time, no. Point one. Point two is, Krishna himself says in the 7th chapter, Esham Tvantagatam Pavam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvanda Mohanir Mukta Vajante Mam Dhradavrata. He says that those who have actually given up their complete sinful reactions, their tendencies for sin, they can engage properly in my devotional service. And the fruit of such devotional service is one can meet face to face with Krishna. So it is not Krishna reveals himself just like that. It's not a cheap thing that he can reveal to anybody and everybody like that. So if one says that I have had face to face meet with Krishna, one has to be super skeptical, very, very doubtful about such claims. Because the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were highest devotees of Krishna, and it's established. They never said, oh, I met Krishna today. They said, hey Raja Vraja Devi Ke Chalalite, hey Nanda Sunokuta. They were crying out for Krishna. Where are you, Krishna? Hey Raja Vraja Devi Ke Chalalite, hey Nanda Sunokuta. Sri Govardhana Kalpa Padapatale, Kalindi Vanyakuta. That is their mood. They were crying out, where is Krishna? Where can I find Krishna? So if that exalted souls, were crying out like that, then one has to really take with a serious grain of salt somebody who says, I met Krishna face to face. It's not that easy. It's not that cheap. It's not something which one boasts. Oh, I have a new iPhone. Oh, I met Krishna. It's not like that. It's not an object of boasting. Even those who actually are seriously absorbed in the mood of that, they feel like so humble. Now, the ultimate humility is Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani says that if Krishna loves somebody, she is just the counterpart of Krishna. She controls Krishna. Krishna is after her. If Krishna loves some other woman, then I'll become her maid servant and I'll serve her so that she can, you know, go to Krishna. She is not willing to go to Krishna. That's her humility. So saying that I met Krishna face to face is a very, very seriously, you know, different claim than what the standard acharyas have given us. You have to better investigate with a grain of salt. Yes, it's not an object of boast. I hope that a little bit answers your question. All right. Hare Krishna. So I think we are over 8:10. And we can take a few more minutes in case we have. Otherwise, we'll have Aarti for their lordships. All right. Thank you so much. Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ji Ki. Shri Shri Isho Parishad Ki.